Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. We just had Cabby in studio talking about your daily bets, your big Thursday. It's Thanksgiving in the United States of America. It's time to be a degenerate today. Make yourself a breakfast Caesar. Have a little mimosa action.
Oh, yeah.
Win a little money.
I'm really getting sick and tired of you guys and all your important meetings, not only because it makes me feel less important because no one wants meetings with me. You know, Blake and Alice, is like every day they're like, oh, they got meetings. Mm-hmm. But two is that it's really stepping on my ability to have like a post-work breakfast drink.
Is it though? Because
yeah,
nothing's even open at 10 a.m.
Yeah, you can't get served until 11, right?
Yeah.
And you also have a meeting after the show today.
It's a meeting that we're all in, okay? You guys have your separate meeting after that. Alish has one.
It's
all right?
With a talent coach, so then I can be a better on-air host and bring in our next guest.
Maybe he'll have a meeting with me.
Welcome to the show, Bruce Boudreau. Wow. See, I had mentioned talent coach and I lost it all. Former NHL head coach and current NHL network analyst. Good morning. How's it going?
Good. It's going great. It's and by the way, my name is, when you say the R before the O, it's tough.
It is. It's like a little tongue twister, is it not?
Yes, it is.
As someone named Ailish Forfar, I know exactly the problem with the tongue twisters.
Yeah. Okay. I get it.
So yeah, welcome to the show. We're talking a little bit about the Leafs today. Obviously they're on a great start to their West Coast road trip, but the thing that we're a little bit concerned about is they really haven't been tested by any big teams, and their next like test against a team that might actually prove them is the Avs next week. So have you felt that the competition that the Leafs have faced over the last little while hasn't really shown them having to face, you know, any big guns?
Hey, okay, first of all, this is the NHL. And when the Leafs were going bad, we're all wondering, oh, my God, what's going on with the Leafs? They're no good. Look, this. Now, all of a sudden, they go on this great run. Oh, well, they're not playing anybody any good. Only in Toronto could we come
up with this
kind of stuff here. No, listen, L.A. is good at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, L.A. just beat them 5-1, so I don't know why we can't say that they're good competition.
Right.
But you know what? The Leafs are playing great, and they're doing it in a different way every night, it seems. But what I'm so impressed about what Toronto is, they are finally playing great defense, and they are smothering teams and not allowing teams. They're not interested, it seems to me, in getting in a shootout anymore. They're interested in winning the games, whether it's a tight game or whatever, because that's how they're going to have to win them in the end. And yes, they're going to get plenty of time to play the Colorados and the Carolinas and the Floridas and the Tampas when time's coming. But right now, I wouldn't step on their success. They're doing what they have to do to make a distance between them and the rest of the field when it comes to playoff time.
So you can only play the team that's in front of you. And it's been one of the major stories of the season that they're playing better team defensive hockey, and that it's the best of both worlds, right? Like, they're not scoring a ton of goals, but if you look at the opportunities, it's been fine. Anybody who's watching the Maple Leafs knows that a night like last night, where all of a sudden it all starts to come together, it just felt inevitable at this point. However, as good as last night was, as dominant performance, as good as 12 out of 14 has been, they lost their defensive ace, their third line center, who has been incredible for them on the penalty kill, who's been great for them in the defensive zone. Blake, our co-host Blake, he pointed out that he has only started, 12% of his starts this season in the offensive zone?
Around there, yeah.
Yeah, 12%, which is the lowest in the NHL right now, Gabby. How does it affect you as a head coach losing a guy like that? The guy who you know is most reliable for a defensive zone faceoff, someone who has that defined role, who kind of does set the defensive tone down your lineup. How do you start to adjust without that?
Well, I mean, to me, you have somebody in your system that's not as good as him, but can take that role, that's good on faceoffs, that's good defensively. Because I don't think what you really want to do is you don't want to take your top two centers and start playing them more in the defensive zone, because they're doing what they're doing in the offensive zone very well. So So, I mean, you try to minimize the movements that you have to make, and you don't want to have to make four changes just to fill one spot. So if that can't happen, then you have to, you know, throw Tavares and taking the draws down low and in his zone, and hopefully he comes off and he doesn't get overly tired. But I mean, that's it's a tough thing, but the Leafs have got good depth, and I think they'll be able to make do for a short period of time. Nobody can make do without for a long period of time when you're missing a real cog of your team, hopefully it's not a long injury.
Yeah, the face-off thing in the defensive zone is a really big one to me. Obviously, Tavares is an ace in the face-off dot, but Kampf had been top 15 in the league in face-off percentage so far this year. So I know you mentioned you don't want to make four changes to fix this one spot. So maybe you don't want to bump Kasha up. Maybe you want to try to find one move that makes that third line still functional in the way it had been before. What would you specifically be looking at here, whether it's, you know, who's stepping into that third line center role, or how does that get tweaked a little bit?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're hoping that they've got a, whoever's sitting out could come in and do the job. I wouldn't want to move Spezza up into that role. I mean, their fourth line is doing really good right now. I mean, everybody's doing really good, knows their role. So you got to find, I don't know, if the guys playing with the Marlies could come in and do a short period, do the role that he's supposed to be doing. But I mean, obviously Sheldon knows the group much better than I will ever know it. But I mean, I would try to do it from within and having one player take that spot, and hopefully he could run with it for a short period of time. I don't know who the player would be. I don't know who the player in the organization would be, but I would hope that it's only a one for one move. And, and leave it at that and everything else be the same, hopefully.
So I want to shift a little bit to the Vancouver Canucks, who are only one win in their past eight games. They have a 6-12-2 record, and that alone is tough. But when you listen to the players and how they're dealing with the situation, some of the quotes are a little bit upsetting, as if you're a fan or if you're trying to not analyze what's happening in Vancouver. They had Bo Horvat saying, you know, it's exhausting. And JT Miller last night was asked if everyone is buying in right now, and his answer was, I don't know. So as a former player myself, I know what it's like to kind of feel like you've lost momentum and you don't have everyone pulling in the same direction. But as a former head coach, my question is, what can you do in that situation to shift the narrative, to get the team back on the right track, and to kind of say baby steps, like we got to win one and then we got to get back on the right track? So what kind of advice would you give to maybe the Vancouver Canucks right now?
Well, I mean, first of all, JT Miller's answer would be really disturbing to me.
Yeah.
I mean, you better have a hold of your team as a leader on that team. If somebody's not buying in, and it should be, you know, obviously the coach is doing everything he can, but the players have got to, they got to tell the players to buy in. If nobody's buying in, the leaders on the team inside that dressing room have got to get everybody doing it. So to me, that was a tough answer, but at the same time, they're getting an ask every single day. I mean, these Canadian cities, whether it be Montreal or Vancouver, that's tough media markets. And I'm sure the players are tired of it. And as a coach, I don't know. I hate to say it like this, but I've never been in that situation. Where teams have lost, where I'm, you know, begging them to play better and to win a game. The closest I came was when we started out in Anaheim, my last year there. We started out 1-7-2, and we had an awful lot of individual meetings, an awful lot of just showing individual clips and talking about how good it could be and how close we are. And we ended up getting out of it and ending up winning the division at the end of the year. But it was something that, again, when we're talking about baby steps, I would say my goal was to win the week, And if you had three games in the week and you could win two out of three, let's not worry about it. And when that week is done, let's not worry about what happened. Let's go on to the next week and take these baby steps. And eventually, I think at Christmas time that year, we finally got to 500. And by the end of the year, I think we're 106 points or something like this. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you just kept going and going and going. But you're not going to build Rome in a day. I mean, you can't sit there and say, okay, we've got to do everything perfect today. We got to do one thing perfect, and let's work at that. Let's start with getting the penalty killing straightened around, which should be pretty simple at the NHL level, but Vancouver doesn't seem to be able to get it right. And I watched it last night again, and I'm going, they're making the same mistakes over and over again, and it's frustrating to watch if you're a fan of Vancouver, which I am.
Yeah.
You know, I really, you know, played with Jim Benning and like him a lot, and he was a great person, so I want him to have some success, but it's frustrating watching. And you could see at the end of the game, Demko caught the puck and he just slammed it into the corner. You could see the frustration. I mean, obviously they need a 3-4-5 game winning streak, but it doesn't seem to be happening. This road trip they're on is pretty tough. I'm not sure, but I think they go to Columbus next. And Columbus is playing good, and, you know, and it's going to be more difficult. It sure looks like Chicago looked last night. It looked like when Chicago played and lost to Winnipeg, that's how it looked like to me. The players, you know, even though they didn't quit, they worked their ass off right to the end. But at the end, you could see on the bench, their shoulders were slumped, and they were just very frustrated with themselves.
Yeah. It's great advice. It's funny because it's sort of universal where everyone wants instant gratification. Everyone wants to fix things, but oftentimes the fix isn't just going to come with one big sweeping thing, or you can't make up for all of it in a day. You said it, Rome wasn't built in a day. Like, it is about those little small building blocks and trying to make things a little bit more digestible, little smaller bites, little smaller pieces build out from there. But I'm curious about your thoughts on just Miller speaking out that way in general. I'm torn on it because I like when athletes are just themselves, and I like when there is honesty and transparency and that a guy goes to the podium and he is expressing his genuine frustration. However, he also is a leader on this team, and that it really did feel like calling guys out to the media. And it does feel a little bit like if your room is already fractured and you're already really going through it, is that helping if you're going out there and sort of, yeah, subliminally calling a bunch of your teammates guys who are not buying in? How do you feel about that as a coach when you see him say those things at that podium that way and taking those issues outside of the room and to the podium?
Well, I mean, as a coach, you obviously take it personally. But, I mean, yeah. I think if we look at that and not try to read too much into it, here's a player that's been asked this question probably – for the last month, every day. And it sounds like you just had another loss. You're very frustrated and you just don't want to answer the question again. So instead of answering it, you just say, I don't know. You know, just like I can feel him saying, I don't know, you know, like basically ask somebody else. I mean, I'm tired of answering that question. So, but we read into it all these other things. And I'm hoping that it's just that one thing that I'm thinking of. I was a player, if I was playing, and I'd been asked that, and I wouldn't want to end. I'm upset because we just lost another game. I said, I don't know. I don't know if everybody's buying in. You know, because you saw Bo Horvat the other day saying, oh, we just got to get better. And everybody, they're always trying to give the right answers, and it is tough. It is so tough when you're asked the same question that's in print or it's on TV or it's in the radio every single day. I mean, it's a pretty frustrating thing, I would think. And I think just maybe JT just wasn't on guard at that time and just was frustrated. So that's where I'm leaving it and hoping that's what that was. Because if it wasn't, it'll end up coming out again and it'll become a bigger issue in the next week.
Mm-hmm. It's too bad that media likes to push the same narratives. Wouldn't know who those people
dirty
would be.
Media,
eh?
People.
Bruce Boudreau, a pleasure as always. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
It was my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
See ya.
Bruce Boudreau, former NHL head coach and current NHL network analyst. And I think that narrative around just being frustrated and speaking out, it can be seen as both you know, motivating if you're a player, being like, this guy's speaking out and he's like, he's putting us on blast. But at the same time, it shows a little bit of fractures within the team. And I'm sure that's obviously happening on their run right now. But it's tough. We haven't seen anything like that in this market in a while. So to kind of like look outwards towards Vancouver, knowing the situation they're in, knowing their fan base is full of angst, it's definitely a difficult situation to be in.
There's probably also an extra element of this in Miller's case specifically, where there have been a lot of rumblings that he could be on the move. And then I wonder if there's an element of like, okay, well, are you with us or are you checked out, like 1 foot out the door?
I'm not covering Vancouver on a day-to-day basis. So that it feels a little uncomfortable stepping in on this one. All I would say is I'm really not trying to be a hypocrite here. I do love when athletes speak out. I like when people are honest. I like when you speak your mind and you are who you are.
Yeah.
I think this is different though. When I watched that, it made me feel a little icky because I'm sorry, dude, but you are one of the vets on this team. The team's supposed to be winning. You're part of that leadership core. And to go up there and have like a really distraught look on your face is okay. To sell it is okay. But to say guys aren't buying in, that now, like Bruce just said, how everyone's being asked the same questions every day. Okay, well, guess what? Now everybody's being asked if they're the ones that aren't buying in.
Yeah, it definitely shifts the narrative to a bit more like finger pointing.
And it is kind of finger pointing because you're sort of insinuating that you're bought in.
But someone else isn't.
Right, and that other guys aren't. And I'm just saying for my leaders, I want you to be a part of the solution. And I don't think that part of the solution is when the other guys aren't in the same room saying that, you know, like imagine today, you know, we got a meeting all together and we have our meeting separately. And one of us ends up going, you know, I'm doing the work and, you know, we need the other people to do. You'd be like, okay, like, why not just like, let's have this conversation. It's uncomfortable, right? Like, it's just a little bit uncomfortable. And so I just don't think that's good leadership. I think good leadership doesn't look that way. It doesn't feel that way. I'm not hammering the guy. 100%. Like, it's an honest moment.
Yep.
And people make mistakes. I don't think that this is the biggest flaw. This isn't the Vancouver Canucks' biggest issue by any stretch of the imagination. I just didn't like it. And I just think that you're only making the problem worse when you address it that way.
I had the one big number earlier of Kampf being 392nd.
Mm-hmm.
This is the 392nd biggest problem with the Canucks.
Good one.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that aren't a problem, giving away Maple Leafs tickets. We're just flush with tickets, everybody.
To the team we're seeing up on the screen right now.
Exactly. You want to see the Leafs play a team that's good?
Yeah.
A real challenge? Well, we can send you there for free. So, Leaf fans, listen up. I guess Avs fans, too. But
yeah,
we want to give it to Leafs fans. We're giving away a pair of tickets to the Maple Leafs December 1st home game against the Colorado Avalanche. Here is how you can win. I know everyone's asking.
Tell us how.
It has nothing to do with swaddling.
No.
You'll need to download today and tomorrow's episodes of our podcast, The Fan Morning Show, and listen for the different code words that are placed throughout each podcast by yours truly. So listen for my voice singing you sweet, sweet lullabies of code words.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've identified the daily code word, you text it to 590-590 for your chance to win. Each code word counts as one entry. The winner will be selected on Monday, November 29th. It's a little bit of legwork for you, but it'll be worth it because you get to go see the Leafs play a real team. And someone just texted in the word swaddle again, and unfortunately we cannot be providing Maple Leaf tickets for the word swaddle.
Yeah.
It's a different word.
I'll give you a hug, though. I'll swaddle you for a second.
We'll swaddle. Yeah. So that's it. Maple Leafs ticket giveaway. We're going to continue to do that throughout the season. So you got to keep listening and put up with us. So.
And that's for when the Leafs return home on December 1st. Returning home on Sunday ahead of them will be the Toronto Raptors, who have one game left on a 6-game road trip. They turned things around potentially last night with the win against the Memphis Grizzlies. To help us break that down after the break is former Raptor and current Sportsnet analyst Alvin Williams. That's coming up next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Good morning. It's Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Blake Murphy. She's Ailish Forfar. He's JD Bunkus.
Baby Friday.
Baby Friday. Hey, just a reminder, we're giving
it
away those
hit the same.
We giving away those Leafs tickets. It's not a guessing game.
No.
You don't need to just text in random words hoping that it's it. You got to go listen to the podcast and Ailish straight up tells you the word on the podcast. Just stop guessing.
Honestly, though, you might as well guess.
It's
no harm.
Fun.
There's no
if
harm.
If you got it right, you'd be real early.
Legendary.
No one's got it right yet. So.
Right.
If someone got it right, I would assume someone internally is leaking the code word to friends.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You just
That's
reminded
really
me.
That's really smart, actually.
To do that?
No. We gave away Blue Jays playoff tickets in 2015 when they were just like impossible
Sick.
To get. And you just reminded me that this son won and then his dad won. And they weren't even like real Blue Jays fans. You could just tell. And they won. And I felt so sick about it. I was so crushed. And they were like, cause the first question, he was like, can I sell these tickets? Like one of the guys said, I was like, oh,
that's,
and, but
awful.
It was just such a fluke. It was just such a fluke of fluky things.
Hmm.
And you just reminded me of that with the guessing, because it was somehow they both cracked the case. They both got through. They both did it. And if those guys are listening right now, that ruined my week. I hope you became sports fans, actually, and I hope that now you're
going to text in and win these Leaf ones and be a fan.
No, don't do that. You already won your amount. I'm a big, like, you should only get one guy, you know? Like, I think it's just, hey, I don't like when someone's like, and I won this, and then I won that, and I always win. I'm like, good for you.
I don't have any friends like that.
You don't have any winners?
No.
Yeah.
No, it's Ailish is the winner.
Yeah, that's probably true, actually. Yeah, look at your left, look to your
scammer.
Right.
Yeah.
You are? Yeah, I know. You said that, like, sarcastically, but...
Like, I know the thing is, that look around the room, and if you don't see the fish, you're the fish.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But it's the opposite. It's like, look around the table. If you don't see the shark, you're the shark.
Do you think that it could be the person that, when we all said, hey, who was the fastest? Say, I'm the fastest. Do you think it could be that person?
I was the fastest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're the fastest.
The person,
elite athlete.
The person who turns
my body's a temple.
Even chips into a competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't think I've been so successful. Got to be competitive in this industry and in all assets of your life.
Here's a
there you go,
way
Ricky.
For you to be successful.
All assets of your life.
Speaking of people who have been successful, the Toronto Raptors got back on the. I know, but I figured we could still talk about the Raptors.
Sure. Sorry. I thought you were going to say people who are being successful.
No, I was going to talk about
like,
the Toronto Raptors.
Okay. Sorry.
It's okay. Do you guys not want to talk about the Raptors yet?
Not really.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Talk about whatever.
No, it's
just the Raptors won last night. A bounce back in the right direction. If you missed our longer discussion on it earlier, again, you can check that out on the podcast, the Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, keep the texts coming in. Tomorrow's Friday because today's Baby Friday, so that would make tomorrow Daddy Friday.
Yeah, but I just Baby Friday doesn't hit the same because Baby Friday is supposed to be the time
to
go get drinks, and then
it?
You guys never go out for them. Like, that's the problem. That's the issue.
We finish
like,
work at 10 a.m.
I know, and that's so. What is there a law against drinking at 10 a.m.?
Well, yeah,
technically there is.
Yeah,
yeah. They should change that. We should
unless
be like
you're at the airport. We'll just head over to the airport and do whatever we want.
Let's go to the airport.
Look, I'll maintain. I understand the rule for
airport.
Some things, but you should be allowed to serve a Caesar at any time of day.
No, duh.
That's my take on that. The Toronto Raptors victorious last night with a chance here to salvage this road trip a little bit. And I want to reset with you guys before we get Alvin Williams, if we're getting Alvin Williams still. We said a couple weeks ago, the Raptors were in rough shape at this point, but they had dropped a couple in a row and they were 7-6, I think, when we discussed this. And we all kind of agreed that if they come out of this tough six-game trip at 10-10, you'd be pretty comfortable with where they're at, heading into 10-11 at home, given that Siakam missed a big chunk of time, given that there have been some other injuries. Now, we didn't foresee OG getting hurt and Kem being back out of the lineup and things like that, and we certainly didn't foresee the defense continuing to be the worst in the league. By the way, that I teased earlier that I have that YouTube breakdown of the Raptors defense coming today on the Sportsnet YouTube channel. I'll tweet that out after the show because that's up there if you want to. I mean, I always feel weird promoting a negative one. Like, hey, if you want to relive some of the defensive struggles of the last 10 games, here you go. But the Raptors figured it out a little bit. They had a very good defensive second half. They've been and continue to be pretty good offensively. They're 9-10 right now. They have a chance to visit the Pacers on Friday. I would assume there'll be a slight dog in that game. Pacers have turned it around a little bit. Had won two in a row, took the Lakers overtime last night. I'd imagine the Pacers are slightly favored, but that's an opportunity to not only come out of this trip 3-3, but despite a lot of things going wrong, to return home at 10-10, where we'd kind of hoped they were. So my question to you guys is, given the how that they've gotten to 9-10 and potentially 10-10, do you still feel as good about it as you thought a week and a half ago that you would?
Yep, I do. I think that there is ways to be negative about some of their losses and their victories. But as I was mentioning earlier, when you can do a comeback win and you can win in a variety of different scenarios and you can win or learn with a bunch of different lineups, to come home and have that comfortability of like, we're back on home for the next 10 or 11 games, we can settle in. Our players are hopefully returning from injury now. I feel like that shifts your confidence level as a player so significantly that you can learn from, okay, if they're 10-10, that's pretty good, like considering the trials that they've faced so far. I think obviously in an ideal world, their defense isn't struggling. They didn't have injuries. They didn't have, you know, a bunch of lineup difficulties and changes. But for them to have fared as well as they have, I feel confident that this road trip ending and them coming home just kind of reinvigorates the team and gives them a bit more confidence that they can, you know, continue to grow on these things.
I know that I'm always the black heart, but, and I've especially been black hearted today, but no, I actually feel a little worse. There's a few different things. The injuries continuing to mount, that's just frustrating. Like, that's not a, you're mad about something. You're just frustrated with that because you just really want to see it.
Still no sample too, right? Of like what the core group of these guys look like together.
But there are some positives from this year. And I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but I'm a big fan of what I've seen from Siakam offensively. I am. I think that it's been like overwhelmingly very good. But the leader of this team is, it's still Fred VanVleet, but it used to be Kyle Lowry. And Kyle Lowry's entire thing when he was quote unquote the man was that Lowry did everything. And that was the beauty of watching Kyle Lowry, is that he was a max effort player who just brought it every single night in a league where you don't see that a ton. And that makes you, that especially in a regular season, that you just trying more on both ends and you just giving it your all and you locking in, that that has a real impact. And it has an impact beyond just the wins and losses. It has an impact on culture because the other people around you have a tough time not doing that as well. And I know this is going to sound like a Siakam shred job, but this is a place where I kind of feel like, hey, the maturity should already sort of be there. You've already kind of had the time to learn these things. I don't care if you have a bad night from the field, you know? Like, I don't really care if you have a bad night defensively where somebody cooks you. But I think I need a little bit more attention to detail, and I need a little bit more toughness, and I need a little bit more of the buy-in as the quote-unquote the man. Because Fred is obviously, again, Fred is the leader, but Siakam should want to be the 1A or the 1B in that relationship. And I've been pretty frustrated over his stretch of play where they've been missing an OG and an OB, and there isn't the, like, desire to say, hey, we're missing OG tonight. I'm going to lock it down defensively. Like, I'm going to be a dog tonight. And instead, it's sort of been like, hey, I'm going to get my 20-plus points, and people are going to celebrate me for those numbers. But on the other end of the floor, it's really lacking. And there's just some things where, like, guys are beating me on simple backdoor cuts, and guys are beating me one-on-one, and I'm not boxing out. And there's just, like, again, I know that this sounds really negative for a guy that's come back from an injury and who is putting up statistics, but I'm just telling you that from my perspective, if there's going to be a quote-unquote the man, and it's going to be kind of built in this, like, Raptors identity of do everything and be tough and play defense, that has been a little disappointing for me. And I really didn't expect that.
So we talked earlier, and I asked both of you guys, and Ailish had a great answer about it, whether that Memphis game, that second half, could be a momentum shifter, a turning point of sorts, because they did lock in and they did figure it out.
Yep.
Do you feel that way about Siakam individually, where, again, the defensive criticism for the bulk of his 8 games back is fair? The second half last night, he was a monster.
Yep.
Do you think that that's a builder for him, or is this a guy who's still, in your eyes, too up and down?
No, of course it's a builder for him. Hey, whenever I criticize an athlete or I criticize a coach or something like that, it's because I think that that person can be doing better.
Right. You don't criticize someone that you have no expectations of.
No. What's the point? Like, no, that's when I make jokes about Amadio. Sorry, but it's just like I didn't have any expectations of Amadio, and I wasn't trying to be rude, but it's just a fun bit where you say, hey, who is this guy? No, with Siakam, I believe that there is a really good player there. And I think that the conversations around him are always just very difficult, and that's why even when I'm expressing something like this, people hear what they want to hear, right? That you're hearing either that I'm shredding Siakam, you're hearing that I'm being too kind to Siakam, right? Like, it's a tough guy to talk about. But I'm sorry, he is what matters the most about the season. Scottie Barnes is a rookie. He's a baby in this league. Everything you get from Scottie Barnes this year is gravy, right?
And he's like he's going to have ups and downs too, and the efficiency's come down a little bit. But like, if you are not thrilled with Scottie Barnes through 17 games, even with the downs, like this is why, again, it's not an Amadio situation where you have no expectations, but he's already playing at such a level where, like, I think the bar has actually gone up. And now people are, you know, the odd bad game. It's like, well, what the heck? It's like, no, this is a rookie. This happens.
That's it. I just think
Siakam's... Fred is a steadier quarter-to-quarter, game-to-game guy. So, yes, Siakam is the swing piece on a lot of nights. So I get it. I was just asking for whether you saw encouraging signs in that second half. Because I did, for sure.
I do see encouraging signs. And this is not to say... I'm never going to come on here and be like, oh, this guy's bum and he can never do it, because I've seen him do it. And I know, I can even remember when he was still in the 905 and Jerry Stackhouse kept saying, this is the best defensive player that we have on both teams. Mm-hmm. This is the best defensive player we have on both teams. That OG Anunoby sort of shifted the way that we looked at Siakam, because OG was so good defensively and he came in and it was his entire identity, that and shooting wide open threes. And Siakam had to start taking over the offense a bit more, where we started to lose the... perception of how good Siakam's defense can be. To me, though, that the Raptors play is not about so much can Siakam be a 1A scorer in the NBA, because I just don't think that he can be. I think he can look like one some nights and he can't the other nights. What I want to see is whether or not at some point it looks like OG, Siakam, Fred, and Scotty look like such a defensive force with the four of them that it doesn't matter what kind of offensive piece that you put with them. That it doesn't matter who the other player is with that group, that those four guys are so damn hard to score on every single night that they're stripping balls and they're getting stops and they're getting out in transition and you're just feeling the weight of all of their athleticism and their abilities combined. And I think that that does start with defense. I'm sorry. And so if you're the leader of the team and you're going to be the man of the team, you're going to do these things, there has to be more of the second half. So great, you're building on something, but that's one half in seven games.
Yes.
Well, why don't we... ask you the same question, Blake. You know, you've covered this team for a long time. You've seen ups and downs, and you know how to analyze if this is just a tough stretch. What's going to be like when they have their top six left in a healthy rotation? And maybe if they do finish at a 10-10 at the end of this road trip, if you're okay with that.
Yeah, I'd be encouraged by it. And again, the injuries, no one likes hearing about it, and every team deals with them, but they're a real thing. JD just mentioned that the foursome that he is narrowing in on for the year, and the foursome that you have to see how they play together and how you look with them, is Fred, OG, Scotty, and Pascal. Those four guys have played a combined 50. Those four guys together have only played 52 minutes. Mm. That's not enough. So that's, you know, even if you don't care about the injury stuff and you say, hey, every team goes through that, you still got to win. Sure. But long term, it's that foursome that you got to figure out. So they need to see more time together. But yes, I'm encouraged. I've been unbelievably disappointed in the defense, but I think the offense is a little ahead of where you'd hoped it would be at this point. I think individually, a lot of guys have had nice offensive seasons, or starts to the season rather. And then I think that you look and like, yeah, this is so basically where I'm at with this is I picked this team to finish 500 heading into the year. If they're 20 games in where the standings are starting to stabilize and they're around 500, I'm okay with that. And I think that when you're a 500-ish team, you're going to have bad stretches. And you're going to have stretches where you look like, hey, is this team figuring it out? And you're going to have stretches where you're like, hey, should this team tank? That's life of being a 500 team, especially one that skews with Dragic out of the rotation as one of the youngest and least experienced teams in the entire NBA. So, by the way, I just got a DM from someone who said thanks for the Homer's Parlay last night. So
that's right.
There you go. Raptors and Leafs both wins. That's all Eilish. There you go.
That's right. Give me a little praise. I didn't get any DMs.
So the Raptors are, well, it's someone who had asked for clarification on it yesterday, and I helped them out.
Well, you're welcome.
So the Raptors are in okay shape. They're going to play Indiana on a Friday, and they're going to try to close out this road trip at 500 and get back to 500 overall. And then they've got 10 of 11 at home.
Their first one at home is against the Celtics, which is tough because we talked about how it feels like a little bit of a hangover sometimes on a road trip.
Yeah, it's like at the seventh game of the road trip.
Yeah, where you're like, I just got home. I'm back into the swing of things. And, you know, you're playing a team that historically is a battle. So do you feel any differently about that being the first game back home?
No, I mean, it shouldn't be. Boston's also not been great, and they turned it around a little bit lately, and Jaylen Brown could be on the way back. But you ran this team off their own court early in the year, and then you laid an egg against them. Mm-hmm. You should want this game back pretty badly. So, yeah, I'm cool with that.
I just, with the defense, it's the bodies, the injuries, and we keep making that and bringing it up, and you're right, it is very important. I just think at this point it's like, yeah, clearly it is. I have a tough time where a team was expected to be awesome defensively and a team that we all came into the year saying defense, defense, defense has been this bad on defense and that we really kind of excuse it the way that we do. I'll be honest, like that does bother me a little. Like the Raptors offense has been better than I think we thought it was going to be.
Yep.
And Barnes is further ahead. And I, you know, this team gets praised a lot despite, you know, not really doing that much this year. Like they really do. And this is sort of the way that they're covered is like praise, 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 because they used to be, you know, the ugly stepchild of Toronto sports.
Unless you're on Raptors Twitter.
Right. And so
it's not praise, praise, praise.
I don't know. I'm saying that the overwhelming way that they're covered is like always looking for the positive spin of the Raptors. And I just, their defense has sucked this year. And yeah, I'm sorry, but you lost players. You're supposed to be a good defensive team. There's lots of other good defensive players that are left over. There's not a ton of teams that have the Raptors personnel. Like, I'm sorry, but that you got to be accountable for this to a certain degree.
Of
like this
you
team
do.
Is accountable for how bad they've been defensively, and this even extends up to management a little bit. You went out and said we don't need a center, and you suck at rebounding. Like, you really suck at rebounding, and your team isn't that good defensively, so you're giving teams second chances sometimes. That's a little bothersome to me. Like, those are things where we're saying, hey, are you supposed to be feeling better or good, or could they turn it around? Like, yeah, I guess if the problem is the one thing, the one area where you're supposed to shore it up. But I actually would rather have it where the offense is more of a problem and we're saying, hey, well, this team is limited and they're growing and we can look at them and say this is growth and development. They're not supposed to be at this like incredible growth and development stage with the defense. I'm sorry. They're right. Just not.
You don't need to apologize for it because it's, again, I have a breakdown, a deep breakdown on it. It's been the talking point. Like there
71 points against the Grizzlies and a half is unacceptable.
Entirely at the rim and the three-point line.
Yes.
And like, look, no matter who you are as a team, if you go a 10-game stretch where you are the worst defense in basketball, there are not enough excuses to make.
This is a league where the Sacramento Kings play in.
Yes. However, the only reason I have mentioned that again is not really that it gives you an excuse to be 30th.
Yeah.
It's mostly like big picture, all I really care about for the chunk of the season between now and the trade deadline when they have to make some decisions is how are those four core guys looking together and how are they meshing? And you can include Gary Trent in there and you can include Ken Burch in there, but I think those
Gary
guys
Trent's
are
on a 2-year deal. Ken Burch is whatever.
I think they're just, those guys are a clear like 5-6 or the head of the next tier. It's VanVleet, Anunoby, Barnes, Siakam. How does that look defensively? Does that work 2-3-4 with those forwards or 3-4-5 across the center position? And how do those four guys just figure it out? And they've played 52 minutes together. Yep. So yes, the defense has been bad to an inexcusable degree over the last 10, and really on the season as a whole now, they've sunk their numbers entirely. Mm-hmm. But I want to see more of those four guys, and that's more than, hey, you're going to win more games when you're healthy is the bigger thing to me. It's not really that, hey, oh, you'll get a guy back and it'll help you defend Memphis better and not allow 71 points and a half. It's like, no, we'll at least know a little bit more about the core, and that's what this season is about. So,
you know what, though? So there's a couple things here. One is that this is sort of the difficulty of the season. Like, we had Bobby Webster on and we go, hey, what's the goal of the season? What are we trying to do here? And it's still sort of hard to know, right? There are a lot of people that always look at it through the eyes of development. And then you're trying to look at it through the lens of just winning a basketball game sometimes and trying to push into the playoff picture and be at the bottom end of that and develop that way, right? So it's just the haziness of the purpose of the year makes it tough. The one thing that is clear is the thing that you outlined, big picture, right? But there, with this sport and with sports in general, we always kind of vacillate between the what's the small, what's the trying to win tonight versus what's the big picture of trying to win a championship or develop this like new winning organization. But I do think about, as we're talking about these injuries, and granted, the Leafs have been together, they're a far more veteran team and blah, 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 blah. But we used to do the thing where we'd compare how the Raptors play compared to the Leafs, and it was always in a, you know, way of tearing down the Leafs. Leafs lost David Kampf last night, their best defensive player.
The league's best defensive player, basically.
They didn't miss a beat. Mm-hmm. They didn't miss a beat defensively. Different sport, different thing. This is more of a narrative job. But I'm just saying that the Raptors losing a defensive guy here and there, having games where they don't lose, where they do lose the defensive guy, having their complete identity shift to we play the worst defense in the NBA. I just think that there's something bigger to that than missing some personnel. And it's going to be, it's now going to be not as big of a question as those four guys together, because it's sort of tied in with it too, right? Like those are the four guys that are most directly responsible to the defense playing well. They're going to be the ones who absorb the most minutes, all those different things. But that's now going into this next set of 10 games. Let's boost Bruce. See, boost Brujo. It's hard. Let's boost Brujo it. I did that one on purpose. Where you try to make it into a smaller set of games, I am really, really, really going to be focused on how the Raptors play defense coming out of that second half against Memphis and now having Utah back. And when they get OG and they do get Birch, hopefully when they can get healthy, if they can't be in the bottom half of defensive teams over the next 10 games.
No.
They got to be in the top 15 of defensive teams.
And they can
no
be. They were number six through their first 9 games. So the Raptors are off tonight. The Leafs are off tonight. The NHL and NBA are off to get all together because it's Thanksgiving in the U.S., which means you have, starting at 12:30, Bears -3 at Lions, Raiders +7.5 at Cowboys.
A team bet.
Bills -6.5 at Saints. You got football all day. The Davis Cup rolls on Sportsnet starting at 10 o'clock this morning. Canada's in action against Sweden. That's your day. That's your day. We'll be back tomorrow.
You better have lots of Davis Cup takes from
you. Yeah, what
up,
Davis
like,
Cup, baby?
All day?
A company man.
Yeah, you're on Davis Cup duties now.
And we're giving away Leafs tickets, so go listen to the pod and look for my code word and text it in. We gave you the instructions if you want to go see the Leafs play.
Davis Cup is the national team one, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Some injuries absences for Canada. Ooh. I don't know how they stack up with Sweden. I just, you know, I do my little thing as we're wrapping up. I bring up the Sportsnet broadcast schedule because... Yeah. The Sportsnet properties always have good sports on
because you called people prize picks today and you know you're in the doghouse again. And so you had to make it up with some promo.
Yeah, I've had a lot of ups and downs this week in terms of company loves me, company hates me, I'm fired, I'm sainted. Hopefully I'll have a good Friday and we can even the week out at roughly 500. I'm the Raptors right now. Just trying to exit the week at 500.
And it's my awkward Friday tomorrow.
Oh, it is.
So it's going to be... just bangers after bangers.
Blake's strategy is smart, though, because he knows about recency bias and how he's just like, I'll do all the bad stuff earlier in the show and I'll close.
He's like, I'm so sweet.
Hey,
you guys love me.
Yeah, I'm the sweetie that says all the things
with the bosses.
Hey, bosses, did you hear me when I said all
so
those
nice.
Things about what's on Sportsnet today?
Sportsnet.
There you go. Just wait for the next broadcast Blake chant, too.
Yeah, broadcast Blake chant is a great chant. It's the Fan Warning Show. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review on iTunes. Do all those things. Try to win Ailish's tickets. we'll talk to you tomorrow.